All right. You are listening to Green Left Radio. And on the line, we have our second guest of the program, Sarah Halfway, who is a co-convener of Socialist Alliance and has recently written an article. But just for our listeners' information, just a bit of a content warning, for this kind of discussion we're going to be having with Sarah Halfway, there will be mentions of sexual assault and kind of general kind of sexism as we kind of be as we are going to be kind of discussing this whole kind of issue that has kind of blown up in the parliament, and I guess what it kind of reveals about sexism in society and so on. So yeah, just a bit of content warning there. So yeah, good morning, Sarah.
Morning, Baker. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I guess you have just kind of recently written an article about the kind of the nature of gendered violence, I guess, in the workplace. And I guess taking this to what's kind of happening, I guess, in the parliament, starting with how Brittany Higgins spoke out about the rape that she had received at the hands of a staffer of the Defence Minister Linda Reynolds. And I guess since then, that whole since she has spoken out about that, you know, numerous of kind of women have kind of spoken forward, and of course it's all culminated in this allegation, a historical allegation against Christian Porter, who is
The
Attorney General. So I guess, yeah, maybe start our, I guess, discussion on, you know, what this sort of situation is, says about what this kind of particular situation and how it's kind of unfolding.
Yeah, I guess, well, I mean, the first comment to make is I'm not particularly surprised or shocked by any of the revelations or allegations that have come out of Parliament in the last period. I wish I could say I was, but I'm not. And I think I, you know, touched on this in the article that I wrote for Green Left. I mean, if you look at the Dyson Heydon case in the High Court, the fact that we've got women in the legal system in Tasmania currently campaigning against, you know, a toxic culture of sexism in their industry. We've got, you know, a peak medical body, APRA, surveying medical professionals and students trying to enter the medical field, reporting in, you know, massively high numbers of bullying, harassment and sexual harassment. And, you know, it was only a few years ago that we found out about the rates of sexual harassment on university campuses and what uni administrations were doing to, you know, cover it up. You know, it's really no surprise to hear that this is happening in federal parliament as well. I think, you know, perhaps what is different is the level of response to it. I think some of these cases in, say, like the Dyson Heydon High Court and now what's coming out of parliament, because, you know, it is white collar, you know, the higher level of education, higher paid jobs, I feel like the response from the public and the media is greater than, say, you know, the rampant rates of sexual harassment of women working in retail and hospitality. So I guess one point to make is that this behaviour is not acceptable in any workplace or in any industry. But I also understand that as our elected leaders and people that are, you know, setting an example for young men across the country, they do need to be held to a higher standard of behaviour. And so on that level, I can understand why we would expect more from people like Christian Porter or Linda Reynolds or any of these people that have been involved recently.
And I guess that leads into kind of, I guess, the next kind of question, because the whole, I want to kind of hear, I guess, your comments on this, what had the federal government's kind of response to all these kind of allegations that have been happening within the Parliament House? What can you kind of say about their Well, I'll just go preface it by saying they're completely, what would you say about their completely inadequate kind of response to the these issues?
Yeah, no, it's pretty disgusting. I mean, you know, Christian Porter's performance the other day, and, you know, basically saying that, you know, if there's any kind of inquiry, you know, not criminal, not a legal inquiry, but just any kind of inquiry into what happened, it will undermine the rule of law in Australia, which is the most ridiculous, hyperbolic thing I've ever heard. And, you know, I mean, we've recently heard that Linda Reynolds, in front of all her staffers, when she found out that Bridget had gone public, referred to her as a lying cow in front of, like, several staff. But then these are the people that, you know, need to go and take a mental health break and check themselves into hospital. So, like, the whole thing is just pretty disgusting. Because, you know, they've been caught out, they've been called on their behaviour, and they want to paint themselves as the victim in this scenario, and they're definitely not the victim. And, you know, goes back to, you know, needing to hold these people to a higher standard of account for their behaviour. I think it's the very minimum there does need to be an inquiry into Christian Porter. You know, it's not about whether criminal charges are placed or not, because it's apparent that's not going to happen. But the question is now, is this person fit for office? Is he fit to be in cabinet? Is he fit to be Attorney General? And without some kind of independent inquiry, it just feels like brushing it under the rug and, you know, as a boys' club looking out for each other, which isn't acceptable.
And, yeah, the nature of the allegation against Christian Porter is, in fact, a very kind of serious kind of allegation. And, you know, I thought it was quite prophetic myself that Christian Porter, on the question of whether he should resign or not, basically argued that he shouldn't resign because that basically means that any allegation can destroy someone's career, which I think is insulting, you know, to all survivors of sexual assault and and also it's also insulting, you know, because this being an attorney general is actually almost like akin to being the second most powerful position in politics. Of course, that's debatable, but I would argue it is almost, in a sense, the second most powerful position you can potentially be in the government, because essentially you're giving the government advice on a lot of the legal matters, etc., and also have a control of a lot of the laws, and so on. But I guess going, seeing that a bit aside, because I think part of what you kind of brought up, brings up, I think, another important discussion point. And that is the government's kind of response has, to these allegations, especially Scott Morrison, have basically been trying to say, oh, you know, for all people who are victims, or have allegation support, they should just take them to the police. And of course, as long-time socialists and feminists, there's a lot of kind of problems with that argument of just deferring all these things to the police. And I guess I wanted to kind of hear you kind of elaborate on why Scott Morrison saying that all these matters should just go to the police and they should be dealt with the police directly. Why is that completely inadequate?
Yeah, no, it is completely inadequate. And you're right, because it fails to acknowledge the problems with which police handle these types of allegations. And, you know, I just think separate from any kind of criminal investigation, all employers, all workplaces have a responsibility to provide a safe workplace. So, you know, if I was in a workplace and there'd been an instance of sexual assault, and the victim had raised that in the workplace, that employer not only has a duty to the person who's raised it, they've got a duty to everybody else in their workplace to provide a safe environment. So whether someone's going to take that to the cops or not and there's criminal charges or not is irrelevant, because it's happened in their workplace. there has to be a process, there has to be an investigation, and it has to be dealt with. Because, you know, if you're just ignoring it, then it's, you're ignoring a significant OH&S issue. So, I mean, that translates to the parliamentary level. And, you know, I think some of us saw this coming when we watched that Four Corners report last year, which, you know, wasn't just about Christian Porter. I think Alan Tudge came up, but this general culture of what I almost see is predatory behaviour of young female staffers in Parliament. So there's the workplace safety aspect, but there's also taking politics out of it, because obviously as socialists we don't see the Liberal Party as having much much legitimacy at all, because we don't agree with their politics. But you've got to protect the integrity of those officers, and if the broader public thinks that there's rapists in office, that they're not being held to a higher standard, that there's not an investigation, that these people can just do whatever they want to whoever they want, there's no trust there anymore in government. And that's a pretty desperate state of affairs. And, you know, whether it was Scott Morrison, Albanese, or any other political party in government, I'd be saying the same. They've got a responsibility to the public to investigate this properly. And restore some level of trust.
Now, Sarah, you're a experienced union organiser. How does this ongoing prevalence of sexism and sexual assault in workplaces right across society, in universities, how does that link in with the anti-union laws in this country restricting the right to strike and the low union density? Do you think those sort of things are interconnected?
Yeah, absolutely, because I really see over the last couple of decades that, you know, in the first instance, it's been women in their unions effectively campaigning their own union in the first instance to take these issues up, because, you know, shock horror, women are 50% of the workforce, and, you know, our issues in the workplace matter. But in the last sort of handful of years, I've seen, particularly in Victoria, Victorian Trades Hall have released their Gendered Violence at Work report, which really started to show the data in how prevalent gendered violence is in the workplace. And they have been lobbying to change our mindset around this, that it's, you know, it's not just a bit of harassment in the workplace. Gendered violence is an OH&S issue. That work cover needs to take up, that unions need to take up. So that is absolutely linked to unions' ability to be able to organise in the workplace for, you know, all workers, but particularly women workers, to have that capacity in the workplace to be able to do union work, to be able to organise. It is pretty concerning when you read this omnibus bill when they're, you know, trying to casualise part-time staff, strip rights, all of it. It is just going to hinder our ability to keep pushing these issues forward.
And I guess I want to kind of hear your position, I guess, in terms of a last question to kind of tie things up. You know, as a kind of socialist, what is your kind of analysis on the kind of systematic kind of roots of sexism, especially in relation to everything, I guess, we've been talking about?
Yeah, look, I think probably one of the underpinning things that, you know, when we get onto this topic in the mainstream, we talk about workplace culture, you know, we talk about, you know, we just need to educate boys and men not to rape and this, that and the other, but in the mainstream discourse there's very little discussion about the economic question, you know, and there's many facets of that, but, you know, the unpaid domestic labour, largely of women, you know, caring for children, caring for family members, the fact that we've got a number of, like, largely feminised industries that are paid, like, pathetically low wages, that that work isn't valued in society, be it, you know, early education, social and welfare sectors, the disparity in super, the fact that older women are the largest growing population of homelessness. Like, there's so many factors there that until women largely have economic stability and their material interests are met, you know, it's hard to think that, you know, somehow we're just going to change everyone's minds and women will magically start being treated equally. That economic basis is something that socialists take up very clearly. And I think we do need to keep taking that up at every opportunity that we get. And that ties into everything, you know, wages, housing, healthcare, all of the above. But I think, yeah, it's a really important point that we need to keep making.
Okay. Well, thanks, Sarah. Do you have any, I guess, final kind of comments you'd like to make?
I think the final comment is, you know, I think there's a lot of women feeling frustrated, and the organisers of this March 15 National Day of Action, some of them, you know, felt that they'd retired, felt that we'd already had formal equality, which we do in a sense, but I think the events of the last week show us that, you know, it doesn't matter how much equality we have on paper, and to a large extent it doesn't matter how many women politicians we have in Parliament. It is going to depend on the strength of the grassroots movements on the ground. So it is really exciting to see that we've got a number of IWD rallies coming up in this March 15 National Day of Action. But I think the most important thing that women can be doing at the moment is to get out on the street at these upcoming rallies and make that fourth wave of feminism happen and get this campaign going.
Word.
Yeah. Well, just for kind of listeners' information, and I will be announcing it as well again following this interview, there is going to be the International Women's Day rally on the 8th of March at 2 p.m. Outside the Parliament House. And Monday, the 8th of March, is actually a public holiday, so most people won't have work when that rally is happening, so they all should hopefully be able to attend on 2 p.m. outside the Parliament House. And then there, as Sarah mentioned, on the 15th of March, there has been a National Day of Action being called. It's been titled March for Justice, with hashtag Women's March. And they're basically all going to be converging in, the main protest is going to be centered outside the Parliament House. However, there's going to be protests organised in every major city in Australia. In fact, I'm pretty sure there is going to be one on the 15th of March in Melbourne at this stage. So I highly encourage, you know, for everyone who's feeling angry about this topic and wants to take action, I think those two rallies, I think, are a good kind of first step, because I think people need to be out on the streets in this. And, of course, with our government being clearly unaccountable to any about these issues, then I think, you know, it reinforces the importance that we have to mobilise on the streets.